We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
2 seconds.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. It is Sunday. That means we are doing Bucks Stock Radio live on Locker Room today, a little bit later in the afternoon today. A little Sunday scaries and Sunday scheduling at work, but I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my calculating, efficient co-host, Rohan Kadi, here to make Bucks stock market moves and then answer some mailbag questions. And we got some doozies already. It's going to be a really fun show. Rohan, how's it going?
I'm doing well, doing well. It's a bit of a gray day, but you know what? Definitely the Bucks and their recent performances will definitely cheer me up. Right?
I don't think so. Unfortunately, that has not been the case. The Bucks fall in. I didn't watch it, to be honest. I've just sort of caught up. I have not sat and watched the whole thing. I don't think I'm going to, but in what seemed like a pretty ugly loss to the Memphis Grizzlies and Bud acolyte Taylor Jenkins last night.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. I would not recommend watching it unless you're into that sort of thing. I don't know, but
we do this podcast, so we kind of are.
Yeah, no, I'm just I guess so, but we can get the general vibes. I think you have a pretty good idea of what sort of went wrong here without having watched the entire game.
I think so too. So let's make our stock moves, and I think a lot of the mailbag questions we've got, and if you're in the chat right now in Locker Room, welcome, thank you for hanging out. Throw some questions into the chat here. We'll get to as many as we possibly can. But our stock moves first. Bucks stock market, we track this after every game at Eurostep Podcast on Twitter. Our portfolio is currently very close, only because Rohan is still has the dead weight of Mike Budenholzer stock. Just holding back the rest of his portfolio. Rohan, your total stock value right now, $303, so to speak. Mine, $299. So you certainly have much more value overall. It's, again, the negative 20 from holding 4 shares of Bud just is such a huge thing to overcome. And it's fitting, right? You have to overcome it. The Bucks have to overcome it. It's like, it just feels it's something we're used to.
It really is. I was thinking actually back on this when I was, doing the stocks for yesterday's game against the Grizzlies. I was like, I really had some hope that these investments would sort of pay off a bit. And I was just reminiscing, like, I was so naive. I was very naive. And now we're here.
We are. We both have 20 buying power this week. Neither short paid off. You shorted Bryn Forbes. I shorted Dante. Dante really just hasn't played enough to have a stock change. I think Bryn added about one unit of value, one or two this week. So your eternal quest to successfully short Bryn Forbes is going to fail for another week, as expected. So I guess you could, if you wanted to have no buying power, you could go ahead and dump that Bud stock right now. But that's a little bit of a boring move. I've teased already before we recorded here. I have some big sales coming up. Are you selling any? Do you want to think about it? Do you want me to go first? What's the order of operations?
I want to hear your sales. So you go for it.
So you asked, is this a fire sale? Am I getting out of certain players? I wouldn't say that. I really think I just want to redistribute my portfolio, rebalance a little bit. And I kind of want to go in on what I think are going to be stretch run contributors and playoff rotational guys. So I'm selling one share of Wara, two shares of Sam Merrill, and three shares of Pat Connaughton for a combined, I think, 45 total value. Yeah, 45. Sheesh. So I'm keeping one of the two kids, Wara and Merrill, and I'm keeping two Pat Connaughtons because it's just so volatile. I mean, we both agree Pat has played pretty well throughout the season, but I think it's safe to say that his value is really going to be tied up for the stock market, at least. Like, is he shooting 3 of 4 from deep, or is he 0 for 4? And it's going to be hard for him to increase his value by a lot. If he's not hitting the threes, if he is hitting the threes, it could keep going up. So I don't need to be that in on Pat Connaughton. I think I've made a nice profit here. I'll walk away from the table.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I like the strategy here and sort of gearing up, because that's what the Bucks sort of, I guess, should be doing during this final 16 games left in the regular season, given they're still a little banged up. Like, they just got Giannis back. He just played his second game back. Now Dante's out. It's tough, but this is what they need to do, because it's not like it's in their control. Time is dictating that there's not much time left to get ready for when the games really, really matter. So I like the strategy you've got going.
Thank you. We have a really good mailbag question about this from OG Jeezy. I'm excited to get to later in the show. But for now, do you have any sales on the Bucks stock market?
I have some sales. I was going to maybe cut some bud, but again, that's boring. Like you mentioned up top, I was thinking about that. It's like, that's not ideal. I'm surprised this has actually paid off to this amount, but I'm going to sell two of my Brook Lopez shares.
Interesting. So you're getting 12 out of Brolo, I believe, currently valued at 6 per share.
Yes.
Brolo Renaissance, baby. The price has crept up. We've seen some good things lately.
We have. We really have. He's sort of rounding into form, as I was tweeting about during last night's game. Like, the threes are starting to fall, which helps. It helps a lot in terms of his overall value, because again, that's one of his, like, the only thing he seems to be doing right now on the offensive end, besides like lumbering through the post every few possessions here and there. But yeah, it's starting to fall. He's sort of, you know, not getting as lost as he did before, given he still has his defensive limitations in terms of, has he lost a step? Yes, that's obvious compared to last season and the season before that. That's just undeniable at this point, but he's sort of making do the best he can. While previously in the season, it was sort of like, oh, shoot, I'm not, like, in position. I used to be able to get there quicker. And he's sort of accepting that he's old.
Yeah, the other thing I think that is going to affect Lopez value, I feel like our expectations have been reset, and it took a lot of the season. But I think we were probably – the last time we saw him play was the Miami series, where he was excellent. And the last full season, he was a legitimate all-defense caliber guy, and he's not anymore. And I just think – it feels less jarring now when I see him not be that guy, because we're just kind of used to it, right? So now when he does contribute positively on offense, like you mentioned, hitting threes, his mid-range and turnarounds and all the silly shots I wish he would never take have been going in at a higher rate lately. He is still a skilled offensive player. And the defense, it just kind of feels fine now. I think it probably felt worse than it was earlier in the season, just because – again, we were used to him being like an actual defensive player of the year candidate. He's not really that anymore, but he's okay. It depends what you ask him to do. And I think I continue to be impressed, like, when he's guarding a player on a switch, a perimeter player. I know it doesn't make sense to call a 7-footer deceptively long, but he's so good at forcing a shot that is not a high percentage shot when he's guarding a perimeter player out there. So as long as he doesn't have to close ground onto shooters from far away, that is death. That is the worst Brook Lopez thing. If he's not doing that, there's a lot of upside, I think, in Brook Lopez. So yeah, we've seen the stock go up, but you're not buying the long-term upside though, clearly, on Lopez.
Yeah. That's sort of the idea here. I think it's good. I just don't think he can go up that much more.
That's fair. Sure. Any other sales?
I think that's it for right now.
Okay. So you're sitting at 32 buying power. I am over here at 65. I got moves coming, Rohan. I got big moves. Let me start with the guy we were just talking about. I'm buying a Brook Lopez for six.
Ooh,
I'm on the other end here. I like what we're seeing. I think he is fitting in better. I think he's getting used to this thing. And, you know, we kind of got bit by this right after the All-Star break when we thought he was going to go on this crazy run and then had some truly awful games. I also think, as the defense gets recalibrated and all this, I do feel like maybe the coaching staff is doing a better job of acknowledging what he should and should not be doing. Like, I don't think Lopez, even at this point, is a bad player or not a good player. He's just limited, and you have to utilize him in specific ways for him to be useful. I think they're getting better at it, and I just think where the team is at, I think he is going to play. He's going to have opportunity, and lately he's been showing he can still be such a plus on the offensive end. I could see him having some more good games like that, especially down the stretch here as he and a bunch of other players rest. He might be used even more offensively in some games than we'll be seeing in the playoffs when the Bucks are at full strength. So I will go in and grab a Brook Lopez for six.
Fair enough. Fair enough. My first purchase here is a little controversial here.
Ooh.
So my first purchase here is I'm going to get in on another Thanasis.
Oh, wow. This is bold. I didn't know what to do with Thanasis this week. We'll see if I buy or not. That is bold.
See, the thing is, like, this could go very poorly for me because this Grizzlies game that happened Saturday was just – it was weird in the sense, like, we didn't see a lot of Thanasis. We didn't see him actually get extended run until the fourth quarter, which was very weird in a game where you just – you need, like, an energy guy. And that's, like, while he does other things, that's his – like, that's his bread and butter. He's great at doing that. Just as a baseline, he'll do that. Even if he's not doing anything else, he's still providing great energy. And they desperately needed that in that game. And he still was not playing for the team, which was weird. But like you could say that this is indicative of what's going to happen going forward and that he's not going to be like a major part of the team. Or you could look at it in the flip side and say, oh, they didn't play Thanasis and look what happened.
Okay, that's fair. What's funny is we are again landing on the opposite side of an issue. I'll do two sales at once just because I have so many to do here. I'm buying four Teagues and four Tuckers for 12 each for a total of 24. And I am making these moves on the basis that I think these vets that are coming in mid-season, Teague and Tucker namely, I think they're going to take a lot of minutes going forward and just be staples of the rotation because – we all know how Bud feels, you know, Teague nepotism aside. We all know how Bud feels about vets who have proved it. And I think, you know, the flashes of war are great. You know, Merrill has shown some. Diakite, honestly, it's kind of I haven't loved his minutes of late. He's just young. He's raw. But I just think as we get closer and as I think we're going to see some games with like a playoff rotation to kind of get ready and get an idea of what's going to happen. I just think Teague and Tuck are going to be relied upon a lot. I think they're going to play as long as they're healthy. I think they've looked good, and they're going to add a lot to the team. I know we have a Teague question later too, so I don't go too far in on Teague, but I think that PJ Tucker is going to take a lot of the Thanasis minutes. We'll still see Thanasis in the regular season for sure, just because you know there's so many games. The Bucks are going to rest. Every team is resting guys right now if they haven't already gotten bit by the injury bug. But I think these vets are going to have a huge role on the team going forward. So I'm going in on them now while they're still affordable stocks.
Okay. I can't say I disagree with that because I'm going to buy one of each as well. Just one.
Oh,
I don't have as much liquidity as you do
in
that respect. But I'm going to buy one Teague, one Tucker. Exact same reasons. I think they're going to be very, very valuable during this stretch run, especially because we haven't gotten to see PJ that much. Because he got there, still getting acclimated, boom, gets hurt, misses a couple games, and now he's back. And he's, you know, he's starting to hit his threes a little bit. His defense is there. It's all coming together. And that's why I think Teague and Tucker are safe purchases for the exact same reason.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, J.J. Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you do?
Here's a less safe purchase. I'm buying a Bryn Forbes for 18. So,
oh my.
When I was watching, what was the Thursday night game? I can't remember now. The Hawks game. Bryn Forbes, I thought, played better on defense than he did on offense. And I'm not worried about the offense. Like, his threes just weren't really falling, and that's going to happen from time to time. But I do think, like, that's the big divide on Bryn Forbes. And I know the on-off numbers, I think he's still worse on the team by a huge margin. I just don't care anymore about the on-off numbers. Sorry, it's a great stat. I don't care about it. I think he has so much he can add to this team. I think having a shooter of that caliber is so huge. And I don't think he is a bad individual defender. I think his size means he can be targeted in certain matchups by certain players. But I think if you hide him a little bit, teams really have to go out of their way to make it to take enough advantage of Bryn Forbes on that end for it to make up for what he can do on the offensive end. So I'm still an irrational Bryn Forbes fan. I see these flashes and I'm just all in. I don't know if we'll ever see the complete package all put together. I don't know if we'll ever see him playing with the big three as much as I would probably like to see, but I'm still going in on Bryn just purely through hope and what I see being really high upside lineups.
Fair enough. Fair enough. That is definitely a risky investment, to say the least. At least for me, and Bryn Forbes have a complicated relationship here on the stock market. But yeah, I can't say I disagree with the upside that he's providing. I love that you pointed out the defense, and especially because that's what, like you said, that's been sort of like the sticking point with Forbes. Like, oh, what is he going to bring on the defensive end to counteract what he's doing on the offensive end, because that's what we've seen in his previous time with San Antonio and stuff like that, is that he provides great offensive output. It's just like at some points he's giving up more than he sort of puts in on the offensive end. So it's important to realize that his defense has definitely improved a bit, not even a bit, a significant bit in this system and with this team. So we'll see if that translates.
I think we might make a very similar move here as we wind down our moves of the week.
Okay. Guess what's my? I have one move left. What are you doing?
I think you're buying Chris.
Yes.
I'm also buying Chris. We're both buying Chris. I'll just get the cat out of the bag now. There's only one player valued at one. I'm buying Axel Toupin for the second straight week, just because there's nothing else I can do. It's like the guys, I've seen a guy post once on like Reddit that he uses GameStop as a bank account. He just has pre-orders and then he'll cancel the pre-order and get the cash back. I don't know why anyone would do this, but this person does this. I don't know. I don't get it at all. But that's how I look at Axel stock. Like, I have no vision that this Axel Toupin play is going to pay off. But like, I have one buck that I can't use on anything else, so next week I can sell two axles and get $2 back, hopefully. But anyway, talk about Chris.
He had sort of a rough output in this Memphis game. Like, given he sort of started to turn it around a bit in the fourth quarter when the Bucks still had the puncher's chance of sort of getting back into this game that they should have won regardless, but Just a rough showing on sort of raw shooting numbers. I did, however, like his aggressiveness going forward, like especially to start that fourth quarter. So I think the potential is there. Like, it's definitely there. We've seen it in the past. We've talked about this ad nauseum. It's there. It comes and goes, whatever. but it's starting to come around again. And get just the shot wasn't actually going down, but he was taking the right shots. I'll say that. It just wasn't going in. It's like the Dion Waiters. I'd rather go like 1 of 19 than 1 of 9.
Yeah.
It means they stopped shooting. That's sort of the performance. It still earned a down stock, but I liked what I saw.
That was the Sacramento game too, right? Didn't he shoot like 3 for 20 or something, but at least he took 20 shots.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, no, I agree. And also I feel like it's almost a desperation play by us. Like,
we're bringing good vibes.
We're bringing good vibes. OGG says, I'm watching 22 close this week. These are the defenders I want him to see him look good against. I just want to, like, there is a Chris Middleton debate. I don't think we're going to lean into it that much until the offseason, just because the team is what it is now, right? Like, there's no more free agents. I mean, they're hopefully going to sign one more guy at some point. Doesn't really matter. IMO. But, like, there's no more trading. You can't sign any more impact players. Like, you're not going to add someone better than Chris Middleton at this point. So you kind of – I mean, you can accurately, you know, describe and break down his play. I'm not saying you can't criticize the guy. But I'm not going to debate, like, who could they have? Who should they have gotten? Should they have traded him? Should they have not? That just feels like an offseason thing to me. So for now, as someone who is invested in this team, both literally in the Bucks stock market – well, not literally, but kind of – not real money, please. We're not financial advisors, but, you know, as someone who likes the Bucks, I want to see the Bucks do well, and that's going to mean Chris doing well. So, like, let me just buy in now. The stock price is low. And obviously, like, I am not one of the people who doesn't want Chris to succeed just because I'm worried about a lot of the things we've seen. I still want him to succeed. I just think, like, our thing on the pod is we always just, no matter how we feel, we're going to call it like we see it. Chris has been dubious, but we want him to do quite well.
Exactly. This we share this mindset, but yeah, it's rough right now, but I think it's on the up. I believe I have some hope. This Phoenix game is going to be really important. Coming up tomorrow here on Monday. You know, it's going to be hilarious. Not hilarious. It's just going to be a headache when Torrey Craig is out there defending Chris Middleton.
If Torrey Craig scores more points than Chris Middleton in that game, I don't even know, man.
Yeah, don't say anything because it might come true.
I'm tired of people blaming me for stuff the Bucks do because of my tweets. My tweets should not carry that much weight. That's a Bucks problem. That's not a me problem. I just want to put that out there.
Fair enough.
It happens too often. I'm like, oh, this is going well. They're defending this guy well, and then 12 straight points. And people come with me with the pitchforks. It's like, hey, don't come at me with the pitchforks. It's probably Bud's fault. Everything seems to be. Speaking of, I'm shorting Bud stock this week, which, you know, at -5, it seems like how much farther could it drop? But the Phoenix Suns are very good and seemingly always a tough matchup for the Bucks. I could see that game getting ugly. I could see a couple games this week getting ugly. And I do think, you know, we definitely hold players accountable as well, but we also hold Bud accountable. I could see this being a rough week for my guy, not really Mike Budenholzer.
Yeah. I agree with that sentiment. I just don't think it can get worse in that regard.
Famous last words.
See, here's the thing. Yeah, you're right. I'm not even going to try. I'm not going to try because it can always get worse. I'm going to short Bobby Portis. And that leans into a question that we sort of had in the chat here. But I don't know. I think it's sort of coming and going. We're reaching a tipping point with Bobby Portis, in my opinion. Maybe that's a little dramatic, but I feel like he's sort of still finding a place in this newly revamped team, especially with PJ back. They're sort of trying to figure out, okay, how do we do this realistically? Because they know that they want to play Giannis at center for a bunch of minutes too, or at least some time. And then Brooke Lopez is starting to play well as well, so you can't really get a lot of minutes with Bobby Portis at center. And then you also have like PJ Tucker to play the four, so it's like, are you going to have Bobby Portis play the four and take up PJ Tucker's minutes? I don't know, and I think it's going to suffer a little bit this week. I'm not hoping for that, but I think it will.
He's such an interesting player with, you know, he's so good at some things, namely offense, and then it's just so not great at other things, namely defense. And, you know, we've talked about just his foot speed means at least he can close out on shooters. I really think, like, if they're going to mess with zone, I think Portis is one of the players who would probably benefit the most, because it's like, you know, oh, there's someone open, like, let me get over to him fast and just not let him take an open shot. I think that's where he's better at. In the drop, it's just really not good. I think switching, okay, he's not shutting anybody down. I think it's better than the drop. So that if I was ranking Portis defense, it's probably like zone slash switching and then drop. But let's get to Claude's question. Let's move on to the mailbag segment, because we're already talking Bobby Portis. We got a couple other questions in the chat. We got some good ones on Twitter. So Claude asked a different Portis question. Does Bobby P's value go up with more minutes played, or is diminishing returns? My gut check answer is to say it's probably, I think you probably hit a point of diminishing returns.
Yeah, realistically, yeah. Because there's only so much he can do in limited minutes, because in those limited minutes, I mentioned this last week or last, I can't remember which pod it was. We dropped a lot of pods in the last
week. We had four pods over 7 days at one point. It felt like we took a long break because we haven't dropped from Wednesday to today. Because there's just so much to talk about and with the Milwaukee Bucks right now. So if you haven't listened to all those, make sure to go listen to all those on the Eurostep podcast feed. Subscribe, rate, review, tell your friends, send postcards, buy a billboard and put listen to the Eurostep on it. I digress.
If there was a billboard bought, I would just be flabbergasted.
We've talked about this before, and it might be beyond. It's asking a lot from the listenership to get a billboard. But if you have a billboard plug and it's just a billboard sitting around, could be anywhere, but maybe Soldiers Grove, a huge Eurostep fan
Soldiers Grove
community out there in Soldiers Grove.
But yeah, Portis, yeah. The Portis question. It's tough because in those minutes, he's going to go and just take as many shots as he possibly can.
Exactly, and, yeah.
Like, sometimes that's a really good thing. He has been an efficient shooter this season. It's been a revelation. There's been reporting done and, like, talking about him working with a lethal shooter and sort of getting his shot right compared to his days in Chicago and New York and to now, where he's just, like, still shooting the lights out from distance and in those face-up jumpers. But at some points, you're like, okay, there's other options here. There's other players on the court too. I get it. That has a lot of value, especially in like a playoff setting where nothing is seeming to work. Nothing is seeming to get going within the system. And you just need someone to go out there and get a bucket. Bobby Portis, he will take those shots. And more often than not, he will go get you a bucket. So that does have value, but it doesn't have as much value when you're trying to get others involved. Yeah. And if you're trying to be like, okay, we need to, as a team, get out of this slump, not just Bobby Portis. So that's where it sort of gets into diminishing returns.
I will say the one way that there wouldn't be diminishing returns, and like this is it gets a little bit more into the theoretical, but the fact that he is now just an elite knockdown, deadly 3-point shooter means if Portis himself and mostly the team were a little more disciplined in, like, you know, not turning every other possession into Bobby Portis facing up and taking a, you know, an 18-foot jumper falling away along the baseline when, you know, Giannis and Drew and Chris are out there. I think if he was just kind of used as more of a catch-and-shoot player when the other starters are out there, there's probably it's less of a diminishing return situation. But also, I think, like, you just can't trust the Bucks to, you know, dictate their own shot selection. Like, it really just, like, however much you like shooting is what your shot amount will be like in this Bucks offense, right? Like, times minutes played. So, like, if you like shooting a lot and you play a lot of minutes, you're gonna shoot a ton, even if you're not good at shooting, because the Bucks just are not good. We've talked about this before, at funneling shots to their best players over time. So that's I think why Portis has diminishing returns, is if he's playing a lot of minutes with Giannis, he's taking a lot of shots that aren't, you know, wide open catch and shoot threes with Giannis on the floor. And that's not ideal, unless they're open dunks off Giannis gravity. But, like, you know, if Giannis is just kind of chilling and Bobby Portis is facing up, that's probably a pretty bad possession. As good as Bobby Portis is, it's just not what you want. So that's why I think we have diminishing returns on Bobby Portis. Let's check out some Twitter questions here, Rohan. I think this one we talked about a little bit from at the original Depot Daniel. He asks, will Jeff Teague have a huge impact come playoff time? And I feel like this is one of those questions. If you would ask me however many weeks ago, I would say, God, I hope not. Now, I think there's a solid chance he does. A huge impact is saying a lot, but I definitely think he's going to be a rotational player all playoffs.
For sure. And you can't even, like, we can't even be upset at it at this point. Yeah. Like, I will admit freely that I was dead wrong on Jeff Teague and sort of his abilities to play for this team and with this team and how much value he could actually have. I was dead wrong. Like, he's actually like a solid contributor. Like, man dunked in a game against the Hawks.
Like, dunk counter at one.
What's going on? I think that's more than Eric Bledsoe. Sorry, Blood. But
oh man, he can't get through a single pod.
I don't think he's dunked this season.
probably not. And you know what's encouraging about Teague though? Is what do we keep saying about Teague to temper expectations about was the shooting, right? Like, he shot 46.4% with Boston. And we kept saying he's not going to shoot nearly 50% from three for the rest of the season. You're just not going to get that. He's only shot 33.3% from the Bucks. And my biggest ire with him is simply not shooting enough. But the one thing I pointed out that probably would work out, that has worked out, is he's getting more than one assist more per game in like 0.2 less minutes than with Milwaukee than he did with Boston. And he's making way more of his twos, 51.6% from two, which would be his best finish ever for a full season from two. Obviously, it's only been 9 games. That'll probably come down a little bit, but he's getting to the rim. He's drawing free throws, which has been quite nice. 2.2 free throws per game, which also is more than Boston. Like, he's making a difference in a lot of ways that feel more sustainable than that gaudy 3-point number, which is why a lot of people were excited. And I think my favorite thing, Jeff Teague's stat this year, he averaged 6.9 points per game with Boston and 6.9 points per game with Milwaukee. This guy is nice. Dedicated to a nice points per game. So shouts to Jeff Teague and his commitment to a bit, but really, again, huge feels like it's just saying a lot, but I think it could feel huge now that the Bucks have not just one, but two point guards who can organize the offense a little bit, penetrate, which is huge, which is kind of the issue with even a good player in George Hill. Like, he wasn't always doing enough. Teague, I think, is a little more active on ball. I think that's going to help the Bucks a lot in the playoffs.
For sure. For sure. He's not going to be sort of played off the floor in that respect, which is one thing I was really worried about. With his role for this team initially, it's not going to happen. And he's going to be sort of, it's like a mini George Hill role. I would say he's going to have that George Hill role.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess you could say he might have a huge impact for his role come playoff time. I don't think he's going to end up the third best block.
That George Hill role is going to be vastly reduced as it was last year and the season before, considering there's no, again, sorry, Blood, but no Blood Void and Drew Holiday is a plus.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we're so used to the backup point guard having to actually be the best point guard on the roster. And it does that position doesn't need that anymore. So, yeah, I think Teague does have an easier time than Hill did, who basically had to step up and be pop-up point guard in the games that mattered.
For sure. For sure. Pop a point guard.
Pop a point guard.
Yep, and he's going to have to do that for Philly now. Has he played for Philly yet?
I don't know. One game at most, but I don't think so. It's kind of weird. It's kind of a weird thing happening there. At MLFFTW21, not even going to try and guess what that is. But this person ask, what can be done to improve the defense? How long is Dante out for? Let's go for the Dante one first, because I'm guessing you don't have inside info on this, Rohan. I certainly do not, but I would think not that long, because I thought he was either questionable or doubtful before he was out the first time, and it's only been reported as, was it a right toe sprain, which it feels like it's probably quite uncomfortable and it could be painful because he's, you know, a basketball player who runs and jumps, but it doesn't sound to me like something that would.
Sure.
What?
He runs for sure.
Yeah, the jumps is questionable. but all this to say, I would think not that long, but honestly, like, I don't have real inside info here.
Yeah, same. It shouldn't be too long. I think they're just sort of being very, very cautious in terms of player rest and health in this sort of stretch run here. They want to keep everyone healthy for the playoffs. Like, I think PJ Tucker spoke on his injury and he was like, this is the same thing I sort of had in Houston. Like, I've just been playing through this, and the Bucks training staff was like, what are you doing?
I love that look, by the way. I love that for the Bucks, by the way.
Yeah, 100%. That's a great, it's fantastic. Like, shout out to the training staff. The Bucks have an elite training staff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think he'll be out for too much longer. Should probably be like maybe 2 games max, probably.
Be a real shame if we got some more looks at Bryn Forbes, Bucks starter, and they looked good. I'm just saying.
Nothing's changing at this point, Ty.
No, I know. Well, it's closing lineups are still subject to change, and that's really what I care about. The other part of the question, though, what can be done to improve the Bucks defense? For me, the answer is simple. Like, I'm sure there are people smarter than me out there who have a 37-point plan to save the Milwaukee Bucks defense and every little way they attack, every coverage and all this. I mean, sure, probably, yes, but I'm not going to act like I'm an NBA coach and go that in detail. I just have one thing. Cover shooters better. Like, that's what it comes down to for me. That's every time I feel like they just – not just lose, but get their asses handed to them. It's because they let someone like Grayson Allen shoot a billion open threes. And listen, in this season, especially this season, like the bubble, some of these shooters are just going to hit everything, and there's only so much you can do about that. But the Bucks just seem so laissez-faire to me on defending threes. It just doesn't feel like they care because there's so much emphasis on the rim, which is good. But one of the shots is worth more points, which means if you're really bad about giving them up, it can be truly devastating, as we've seen time after time after time after time over the last X amount of seasons. I can't even just say 3 seasons, because we saw plenty of Bucks threes in the Jason Kidd era as well. So I just think, like, they just need to defend threes. Like, it feels like every time they go on a big run, either they get kind of lucky and guys miss threes, which just has not been happening that much this season, or you see them run shooters off the line. And even if then they get beat for a layup every now and again, it doesn't happen that much because they have like Brooke Lopez or Giannis or other great defensive players like Jrue Holiday hanging around to make up for some of those mistakes, or B, they just, you know, they get stops. They don't give up a ton of threes, and suddenly their offense is more than enough to build out leads. So for me, it's that simple. Defend the three. Don't give up all these open threes. I think if they do that, they can hang in there and beat pretty much anybody. You know, we'll see about like Brooklyn and all that. We have a great question from Snell season I want to get to next. But what is your thought on fixing the Bucks defense, Rohan?
Yeah, realistically, stay home on shooters. Like, it's a very simple concept, yet something that this team has struggled with for the past like 5 years.
Yeah.
But I like you mentioned, I get it. Like, you, when other teams are just keep on pressuring the rim, you kind of have to adjust to that. You have to sort of, it ebbs and flows in terms of the actual like defense out there. They're sort of keep on pressuring the defense towards the rim, anchoring them towards the rim, and that opens up way more shooters. And that's just, it's sort of what happens. It's like a pick your poison sort of thing. I think you can realistically do both. You're not going to be able to take everything away. Like, we've seen the Bucks try to take away everything. God, we're bringing up a lot of old demons in this episode, but
you gotta love it, baby. Trauma season.
It's not as bad as bench the Bucks.
Man.
we can't escape that ever.
Never again, but until they win a championship. I'll say that.
That, yes, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with that. But yeah, it's, you can't take away everything, but you can do your best to take away the most efficient shots in terms of like threes and, you know, shots at the rim. Like, that's something you can do. That's something they've tried to do and they've been trying to do. Given they will mix up their defensive scheme, we saw their big adjustment in the Memphis game was just going to a 2-3 zone. And like, they stuck with it. Props to them. Like, at least they're trying things, but they're still not doing it as effectively as they should be. And it just starts with staying home on shooters.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen so many like bad doubles and bad help defense where like a buck will just inexplicably leave a good shooter in the corner.
Drew Holiday did it last away. Night.
Yeah, it's
yeah. He was helping Brook Lopez. I forget who it was. I think Jonas caught the ball at like the left baseline and was sort of going on Brook Lopez, and then Drew Holiday just came and flashed help, and then he just threw it to the shooter and he knocked down a three. I can't remember who it was, but it was just like it was as simple as that.
It's literally the Kawhi thing all over again, where they just get so rattled, and it doesn't make sense because the whole point of the Bucks system on both ends, like offensively and defensively, their ethos is like mid-range shots, not good, rim and three, good, and yet they will sell out so hard to stop players from taking contested mid-range shots and then leave three-point shooters wide open, which goes against everything that they want to do. Like, supposedly, like, their core values are, you know, those are the bad shots. Here are the squares on the court, you know, under the rim or threes. Or, you know, if you're Chris Middleton, you get special privileges sometimes. Like, it's just so mind-bogglingly frustrating, if that even makes sense, that they will, like, sell out to stop a post-up. And it's like, Jonas Valanciunas rocks, but if he's going to beat Brook Lopez, he's going to beat Brook Lopez. Make him do it. It's, you have so many good defenders. Let them defend instead of like having over helping and, you know, dropping and letting good shooters just be wide open whenever they want. Like, let the defenders defend. What is the point of these great defenders if they're not going to be defending their man? It's very frustrating, but I think, yeah, I think we and probably most people who have been watching the Bucks for the Giannis era are probably in agreement on how the defense could be better.
For sure.
Let's go to Snell season. Got a question I'd like to hear your takes on. And well, I think we have two more good questions lined up after this. Realistic playoff expectations / predictions. Also, of course, thoughts on Tony Snell. Would love Tony Snell back on this team. We were hoping beyond hope somehow he'd get bought out. He was too busy being the best wing on the Atlanta Hawks. So shouts to Tony Snell. Wish he was still a Buck. Unfortunately, yes, not. He could have big revenge game chance if the Bucks draw Atlanta in the first round.
I couldn't even be mad at it.
No, I couldn't either. You got to root for Tony Snell.
Yeah, but, for sure. 100%. Okay. Always rooting for Tony Snell. But yeah, the basketball question in terms of the Bucks here, realistic playoff expectations / predictions. I'll go first here. I'm going to say this is tough. Okay, maybe I won't go first.
I think they lose to Brooklyn, wherever they play Brooklyn, I think is what happens. I really do still, after all of this, I think they beat all of the teams below the top three, including them in the top three. So anybody who's not Brooklyn and Philly, I think they just handle, even Miami, the boogeyman Miami Heat. I just think that team, something is off. I think they're kind of struggling getting healthy. I don't think the shooting is there. I think they could exercise that demon. I think they could beat Philly. I still do. I think they'd
handle Philly and it wouldn't be that much of a problem.
I could see that, but I think they either lose in the second round or the conference finals. I don't think they beat Brooklyn just because, you know, we touched on this in our seeding scenarios pods. I just think you have to be so well optimized to beat that Nets team if healthy. I mean, that's the one thing with the Brooklyn,
that's
right?
That's the one, like, thing I was going to bring up because yeah. I do not think they're going to be at full strength.
They've never been. They literally never have been.
And like Kevin Durant just left the game today with a calf contusion.
It's tough, which is terrible to see.
Yes, obviously, like, that sucks. I would much rather see the Bucks play the Nets at full strength. Obviously, it's great for basketball. I'd never wish injuries upon anyone. Yes, thank you for saying that. I'm glad I can say that. Yeah. I do not think the Brooklyn Nets will be at full strength, and I do not think that the Bucks will lose to them.
You think the Bucks will beat the Brooklyn Nets?
And then lose in the finals.
See, I feel like if they beat Brooklyn, if Brooklyn is moderately healthy, I could see them beating whoever comes out of the West.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just like, this is just the Bucks fan in me. I just do not expect them to do what they probably can do. So I think they're going to make it to the finals and we're going to be overjoyed. And I'd still take that as a season result. Like, that's incredible. But I'd still think they'd lose in the finals, even if they were well equipped to beat whoever comes out of the West.
I think even if Brooklyn is a little, and I mean, I guess we should, I don't want to say cover it, because I don't think we have to go in detail, but LaMarcus Aldridge retired, so Brooklyn is for sure not going to be at full strength if you count him. because some heart issues, which is very scary.
Yeah, heart arrhythmias. Yeah, very, very scary. Cardiac arrhythmias are no joke. Shout out to LaMarcus Aldridge. Great career. Wishing you all the best.
Yeah, doing the best thing for him. It sounds like he's going to be okay. It just flared up during a game again, which I think it happened before when he was with the Spurs. So very unfortunate. Would love to have seen him get a shot at a ring here in Brooklyn after sort of having one that also got derailed by injury, but not to him, to Kawhi Leonard when he was with the Spurs back in 2017. But yeah, I could see Brooklyn not being healthy. And I mean, hey, the Raptors, you know, got a ring because of a team not being healthy. So these things happen. It does happen. I think there's arguments that the first two Cavs Warriors finals matchups were decided, you know, in large part due to health. I mean, obviously 2015, and people forget 2016, Bogut being out made a huge difference in that series. So these things happen. There's no asterisks. I think I said that. It's hard to say. But I don't think those truly exist. I think every ring is really, really hard to win. So you take
Mickey Mouse ring.
Except for the Mickey Mouse ring. So you take it if it happens, for sure. But I just think you have to be so well optimized to beat Brooklyn. And I just don't trust the Bucks to do it. And they just literally like four different players plus. I could see absolutely lighting the Bucks on fire in any given game. So even if they only all do it once, that's still enough games to win the series. So I'm going to say they lose to Brooklyn in the second and third round. Rohan, you think they're going all the way to the finals and then coming up short? I think they're going
to the finals. I'm starting to get less high on Brooklyn.
Interesting.
As a threat to the Bucks. I know I was super, super high on that, and I'm still high on that. I still think they're the favorites by far, and it's not even close. I think the Bucks are well optimized to beat them. Brooklyn's defense just is a glaring hole. It's a glaring hole, and the thing is like, oh, how are you going to stop them on offense? Well, okay, sure, but the Bucks can also do like the similar sort of offensive outputs. Like they're, again, one of the top-rated offenses in the league, and this time it's actually well-suited for playoff basketball. And so if they're both sort of putting out insane offensive outputs and one team can play defense and one cannot, you got to pick the team that can play defense, at least a bit.
That's all well and good until it's like the third quarter of a close game and Pat Connaughton defends Kevin Durant for 8 minutes and those 8 minutes cost the Bucks the series.
Okay, sure. But KD's going to do what KD does anyway.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I guess. But
and that's part of their insane offensive output. That's been going on throughout the season, given KD's missed a lot of time. But even when KD was on this healthy and on the team, like with the Harden trade, they were still producing at a similar offensive output as Milwaukee.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm going to have to see Bud not find a way to hilariously blow it. Not hilariously for us.
Steve Nash might.
Yeah. Yeah, he might. It's just a lot of hopes for me in the Bucks beating the Nets in the series. There's just like a lot of things need to happen that I would not bet on happening. But that's, you know, we've done a lot of Nets. I'm sure we'll circle back ahead of a potential series or even before then. But we have two more questions to get to. Jin the Buck at E. Chorso? 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 But Jin the Buck asks, we always talk about coaching and the mistakes that Bud makes, literally right now. But what about the front office? Are we satisfied with their work in the past two off seasons? Are the pieces around Giannis good enough? The Bogdanovich story really disappointed me, and I want to hear your takes on Horst. Fascinating question.
Really is. Horst seems all right. This front office seems competent. Like, they keep their guys. They sign their guys. Like, obviously, they got Drew. They made the Drew trade. They re-signed Drew. Obviously, the big kahuna, they re-signed Giannis. Like, given that's completely in Giannis's hands, but like you got to make the argument for it. I don't know. I feel like they've done a better job than most small market teams in sort of putting good talent around it, like a super duper star. And that's why, you know, Giannis is the guy who stays in that regard and is actually on a contender rather than, you know, teams that do not really figure it out that much. And then the star ends up leaving. Like, that hasn't happened in Milwaukee. And a large part of that is due to the front office. They do have their mistakes. I do not think the Bogdanovich thing was sort of the Bucks' fault. We'll never know, actually. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, no, I've given up on thinking about it because
we're never going to know about it. So I can't really say that's the Bucks' fault. I can't say whoever's fault that is. We can't hold it against them if we don't know what it is. I guess this is sort of like an innocent until proven guilty sort of situation, as hard as that is to say about like the Bucks' front office.
Right.
But yeah, like they do have some weird contract things that they sign. Everyone gets a player option. Like that's a guarantee. Also, like to be fair, like they're also signing to play with the Bucks, so you got to give them what they want. So I don't know. I feel like they're doing a decent job.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you count Brogdon and Bogdan as factors outside of the front office's control, so if you assume that Brogdon was not retained because of money, not because John Horst and the front office just would rather have had the picks than Brogdon, then it's hard to hold that against Horst. And I think, you know, the same deal for the Bogdan thing. I think it's probably pretty safe to assume that I don't think the front office blew that. I mean, they pulled off the trade. Like, they had it figured out, and then whatever happened, happened, whether it was, you know, a different actor within the Bucks. Maybe it was the front office. Maybe it was, you know, people blame Woj, the NBA in general, Bogdan's camp, probably not the Kings, but the Kings are pretty incompetent. So who knows? We just don't know. But if you assume those two things are more outside of Horst's control, I don't know what he's really messed up. I think he's done pretty well. Drafting Dante?
Yeah, draft is a little iffy. Like DJ Wilson was just a whiff. Dante's been good, I guess.
The second round guys look pretty good. They just hasn't drafted that much.
Second round picks are really nice. Yeah. The Bucks just don't have their own picks. And they won't for a while. So...
Yeah, exactly. The draft is like fine, but not great. But like also where they're picking, it's not terrible. But I think just the fact that they've been able to add a player like Jrue Holiday, and I think their work around the margins has been really good. Like Bryn Forbes on a minimum, Bobby Portis on the biannual. The DJ Augustine contract sucks, but when you get out of it within a year and like actually gain assets and PJ Tucker out of it, it's almost like, I mean, it still counts, but I mean, he realized it and got out of it, which is like a really important thing that is nice to see. So, and obviously, you know, Brook Lopez was first brought in. That was Horst, right? That was Horst's first offseason.
I believe so.
Cause that was Bud's first year, right? They started together. So, I believe,
where Horst might've started the year before.
Maybe. Yeah. But bringing in Brook Lopez regardless. Yeah. Was a great move.
Horst was the one who fired Kidd.
Oh, da-da-da. Yeah, you're right. So definitely Lopez. That was a great move. I mean, even the Bledsoe trade at the time was a really good move, I think. It just didn't end up panning out. And again,
the Heritage deal was a really good deal. It just didn't work out at all.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think my overwhelming thought on the Bucks front office is like they at least are taking these shots to try and give Giannis a great core. And I think, you know, I think they've probably gotten just about the best possible players they could have gotten to play with him. Like they were never getting Harden, in my opinion. You know, Beal has never actually been available, the guys like that. So ending up with Jrue Holiday and Chris and all that. And again, like filling out the roster with good supporting players. Last year, Wes Matthews on a vet minimum ends up being a starter and one of the four or five best players on the team. Like they've done a really good job in finding ways to add talent, even when capped out. That's going to continue to be really important, obviously. So I'd say overall, I think Horst has done a pretty good job. It's not flawless by any means. The Pat C thing, whatever. I'm not that fired up about it. But I think overall, like the talent is here. They are in the contention picture, which is not always easy to do in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I think, you know, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. And like the wins keep coming and Giannis and Jrue and Chris are all locked up long term.
Yeah. Like they didn't turn into San Antonio, Indiana, New Orleans. Like there's plenty of avenues for them to go wrong. Like Orlando back in the day. And I guess now too.
Even teams like Portland who have just, you know, they've never.
Yeah, but they just stay in mediocrity. Sorry.
They ended up drafting Dame and CJ and then like have really never been able to add a true impact. I mean, Nurkic has looked like that at times, but it's also been a while since he's looked like that. And they haven't, like, you know, Robert Covington is a fine player, but it's not a Jrue Holiday level add. Like And I do think like we could see, you know, the third best player on this team potentially change if there's another questionable playoff run. That's a whole different story. But like, I think Horace will do whatever if he thinks it gives them a better shot to win with Giannis. Whereas some of these teams, it feels like they're just kind of comfortable being like, you know, if 40 things break right, we could win a title. Whereas I think the Bucks are a little more aggressive.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm just looking through some of these drafts. Like the 2018, the Dante draft is a little tough because after Dante it was Lonnie Walker, Kevin Herter. Like I think Dante could be better than Kevin Herter.
Yeah.
Landry Shamet. And I guess before him, like, I guess there are some players that didn't really pan out, like Jerome Robinson, Troy Brown Jr. is good, Zaire Smith. So,
Yeah.
Mo Bamba and whatever happened to him. Kevin Knox is not great. Like,
yeah.
Getting Dante at that is good. And even in the second round, like, you get a guy like Sam Merrill with the last pick. You get Jordan Wara with the 45th pick. When a lot of these other players in between will not be that good, probably. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
And I guess we should mention the other.
I don't want to give too much credit. Like, I guess I should give credit. Like, credit where credit is due. They've done a great job. Like, could there be some things on the margin? Sure. Should they still get Masai? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, Masai on top of Horace. How about that?
Exactly. And I will say one thing we haven't mentioned is, like, losing out on Christian Wood and kind of passing up on Sterling Brown, who's looked like a good player otherwise. Frank Mason not being in the building, Dragan Bender not being in the building. They're not really good at retaining and developing talent, which is definitely an issue. It's again, it's so far it's been compensated by the fact of, you know, they've managed to continue to find vets who can just play right now. And it's kind of, it's difficult to develop while contending. It's like almost impossible to do. So I kind of get it, but they let talent walk a little bit too often, which is unfortunate. So again, I wouldn't say A plus for Horace, but I'd probably say like B to B plus area,
which is good. That's better than most teams.
Yeah, at least we don't have Danny Ainge saying, you know, almost. Yeah. We almost. Should have said almost on that Tice trade though, Danny. Okay, OG Jesus question, last one for this session. Thanks everybody for hanging in. My one question is, and I know Bud has tried new things all season, but do you guys also feel like the Bucks' approach to this regular season is kind of similar to the bubble? As far as not taking some games seriously. So I think sort of, and I think it's, I don't know if it's an active thing they think about or if it's just kind of the Bucks are a little bit of an unserious team at times on the court. Is that, I don't know. What do you think?
They definitely play like it. They definitely do. And they just don't wake up for some games. We've had this complaint about this franchise from guys like LeBron. Remember that a few years ago?
Maybe? Yeah. What did LeBron say?
So it was back when like Giannis and Jabari were on the team and they're like not great, like middle of the pack. And it's just like,
Yeah. Oh,
they get up to play like us, the Cavs, but they just don't do that every game. Sort of like something like that.
Yeah.
Like they.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, they take games off like literally for rest and health reasons, but figuratively in terms of like, oh, we should win this game. And then they don't. And because you need to take every single game seriously. There's not really any bad players in the NBA anymore. Like the talent pool is just so massive. And every team has like a couple players that are capable of going off against you. Like even if you're a bad team, there's still players who are capable of making your life very difficult on the basketball court. Because that's just...
The Bucks are great at finding them.
And that's because they don't take every team seriously. And maybe they should. They really should. Credit to them, though. They seem to get up for the big competition. But sometimes you might underestimate your competition and then you sort of flail out early.
I really think a lot of this is... It might not be like they literally aren't taking games as serious, although I do think that happens from time to time. I think the philosophies on both end of like, you know, how often they leave shooters open on defense and just again, like the let it fly mentality on offense just makes things look unserious because it's so easy for the Bucks to end up in disadvantageous positions, right? Like, you know, there's going to be shots from role players who aren't like wide open way too often when Giannis is on the floor. And on the other end, the Bucks are going to give up threes. And suddenly it's like you can give up such a big run so quickly doing that kind of thing that it just, you don't look serious out there, right? Like, I don't think they optimize their players or put them in a great position to succeed. And I think that just comes from some of those mistakes we see on both ends that just, it makes them look ridiculous. Like, they can lose Giannis minutes from time to time because Giannis isn't being featured enough on either end. And like, Giannis doesn't always, you know, Giannis has had some bad games this year as well, but I mean, there'll be times when he's on the floor and barely touching the basketball because Bobby Portis and then Dante DiVincenzo twice felt like they were open. And it's been 2 minutes since Giannis has gotten involved on offense and the other team has hit two threes. And suddenly, you know, a game that was close is heading toward a lead for the other team, or, you know, maybe the Bucks were surging and then they give up a lead that quickly. So I just feel like their various mantras of like, not running that much scripted offense throughout games. And, you know, if you feel open, shoot, just leads to some bad decisions that can cost the team that then make them look unserious. Like when one team is going down and running like pick and rolls and horns and Spain pick and roll and all this other stuff to optimize their shot selection. And on the other end, Dante DiVincenzo is taking like a step back sideways 19 foot two that comes off front iron and leads to a fast break dunk, the Bucks just look unserious. I don't know if it's like, you know, players 1 through 13 aren't locked in enough. I just think sometimes the way they play just makes them look worse than they are.
Yeah, that's a completely fair assessment. Just it, there's a lot of factors that sort of play into this, like you were mentioning. It's tough because you need everything to sort of fall into place. And that's what makes winning in the NBA so difficult. You can't really have any weak points in terms of your mentality, your system, your play on the court. All of that feeds into each other and sort of makes, you know, who you are as a team. That's why so many teams struggle and not every team wins. Like, you need to be laser focused on every single possession, every single facet of the game, every single night. And that's what these Bucks need to do because they're not doing it right now. And then when you don't do that, you get blown out at home by Memphis. That's what happens.
It sure is. Is the Phoenix game home or away?
Hopefully it's a home game so they don't – actually, maybe not. It is a home game. It is a home game.
If they get blown out twice in a row by these teams, man, it's going to
– well, okay.
We're going to have some more conversations.
Phoenix is like almost the one seed in the West and Grizzlies are struggling to make the play-in.
Yeah, but the Bucks are a top three seed in the East. Like, I'm saying blown out.
Okay.
If they lose, they lose. But if they get, you know, blown out, and I guess they didn't get blown out by Memphis, but I think it wasn't that compelling of a game from what I understand. And again, like, literally without the maybe their best player.
Close.
That's what I thought. But like Memphis, literally without a guy who you could argue is their best player, especially their best two-way player all season long, and they still can come in and soundly beat the somewhat rested Bucks. I mean, I know it was the third and fourth night, but they did. You know, they had a game off and they were at home, so
Memphis
just
is
tough.
On the
second
night of a back-to-back.
Oh, the Bucks excuses are just not, they're not hitting right for me this year. I'm not buying a lot of Bucks excuses this year, but that Phoenix game better be competitive at the very least is all I'm saying.
Yes, it has to be. And they've lost, I think, like 5 or 4 in a row at home. Like, you can't do that.
Oh my goodness. That's great. I did not know that off top. That's a great stat. Yeah, that's brutal. They need a home win. And that's, I guess we'll see on this question to wrap up here from Jeezy, like a serious team, in my opinion, comes out and gets a big win here in this situation of like coming off of a loss, all these losses at home in a row, all this. But I do feel like we've seen Bucks losing streaks go longer than ever this season, even when Giannis is healthy. And I know Drew missed a lot of the longest losing streak games, but I just feel like they don't come out with that same energy they used to. And I think part of it is, you know, maybe the guys are getting more rest or whatever, and they're just trying new things. But I do see a little bit of a difference in intensity. I mean, that team 2 years ago or last year, both, I think, was just mad when they lost one in a row. They were like, we are not losing two in a row. Now they're like, oh, well, you know, we tried zone for 5 minutes, so whatever happens, happens. I don't like that.
No, and especially because I mentioned this up top, there's only 16 games left. You can only use that excuse for so long. If you can't keep doing that until like the last regular season game and be like, okay, now it's playoff time. Now we're going to do this. Given the first round might be whatever, but it's still the playoffs. You can't do that. It's otherwise you just get
the first. The first round will be harder than last year, I think.
Maybe.
Potentially.
Maybe.
If you draw like Miami or Boston,
you won't. Those are going to be the 4-5.
Maybe. It's a weird season, man. I would not pencil in any of those teams where they are right now. But I got to see some more. I got to see some dogs. So I guess I wasn't. I'm changing my answer slightly. Like I still think all those things play into it, but there is something there of like this team should be a little madder when they lose. Like it's okay to say we're trying new things, and that's fine, and it's okay to know that that's going to affect your margin of victory in some regular season games. But I do think sometimes they're a little too – they point to that a little too much. It's like, that's fine. You're trying something new. Like, it's Memphis without Jaren Jackson Jr. in Milwaukee. You're trying things
that help you win.
Also that. Yeah. You know what? I think I changed my answer a little bit. I do think it's a little concerning, and I hope we see some more dog
against Phoenix. If they don't get right in the next week, I will be very, very concerned.
Yeah, because it's the bubble thing again where they, you know, whatever for whatever reason, that switch never got flipped and it cost the Bucks big time.
You got to do it early because we know this team is capable of doing big things. I just predicted they'd make the finals. So
wild.
They've got to put it together or I'm going to look like an idiot. So protect me, Bucks. and I feel like I've made a fool of myself multiple times, but this would be the biggest please, I've made some bold predictions. Please do not let me down. That's all I have to say.
Fair. But yeah, no, I just think that, and there's going to be some games that just basically punt, and I'm totally fine with that. Like rest 4 starters, you know, to avoid the guys playing 4 and 6 nights or whatever the hell the NBA is trying to do to these players this season. I have no issue with that. But when most of the guys are playing, I need to see some better basketball and like let's start to get serious. I would like to see personally, if you have to punt like 3 of the last 16, fine. Maybe you take like 2 of them or 3 of the rest a little less serious. Let's see playoff rotations for 10 games. Like let's actually get ready. I hope we see that. We'll see what
we saw shades of that in the Memphis game. So we'll see. We will yeah. see. Do we have anything else here?
No, I think we ended up getting to every question we got asked, and I feel like we didn't get a billion questions, but every question we got was really good. Yeah, so it made for an awesome question. Podcast.
Come on, these are the Eurostep listeners. Come on.
Yeah, I should have expected.
So I guess we can wrap this up here. Say thank you to everyone who was here live on Locker Room. Given this was an odd start time, but we should be back to our normal Sunday times as usual. That we do Bucks Stock Radio here live on Locker Room. But if you aren't here, you're just listening to it as a podcast. Thank you for listening as always. If you are on Apple, you know, leave a rating, send it to us. We like seeing those sort of things, and just subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're using. Tell all of your family and friends about the show. Spread the good word about the Eurostep. Check out all of the content across the entire Blue Wire podcast network. Stay safe, everyone. Please, I'm begging you. And we will talk to you next time.